San Diego's talk radio leader, 760 KFMB presents It's Your Money and Your Life. For the next hour, Richard Muzio and Joe Vecchio will educate and inform you on matters related to your financial future, your life, and your leisure. Now, with It's Your Money and Your Life, here are Richard and Joe.
Good evening, buddy. My name is Joe Vecchio, your co-host, announcer, and producer, coming to you from KFMB with 50,000 watts of power. We're heard not just in San Diego County, but Orange County, L.A. County, up the coast of Seattle, down to Cabo, out to the desert. We're free on iTunes if you search It's Your Money and Your Life, and you can hear all the podcasts on iymoney.com in addition to our station's website, which is 760kfmb.com. And now time to introduce the main man of the hour. He's a CPA extraordinaire. He's an accomplished marathon runner. He's a best-selling author. He's a philanthropist and a family office expert advising several high-net-worth families. His name is Richard Muzio. Richard, good evening. How are you tonight?
I am marvelous. I've been enjoying this great weather.
It's been wonderful. Yeah. Hey, a quick get well to Eric Rubalcava, our regular soundboard operator. He's a little under the weather, and hopefully he'll be back in a few days. But get well, buddy. We miss you. And let's see, what else are we going to talk about before we get to our... We got two great guests tonight, and one is all the way across the pond. But
nothing. That's why we're going to get to our guests. We're going to talk about nothing else.
Well, we ought to do that. This is an encore presentation. This gentleman is an accomplished filmmaker, film director, and producer. We had him on last year because he was the driving force behind the great film, or films, I should say, about Billie Jean King's 40th anniversary and the Battle of the Sexes. And, of course, everyone knows Richard's connection with Bobby Riggs as a youngster. But without further delay, he's an accomplished director. His name is James Erskine over in London right now. James, how are you tonight?
Yeah, I'm good. A little tired, but I'm good.
Yes, you're a new father, so we understand, right?
Yeah, exactly.
How old is your new addition now?
She's 7 weeks old.
7 weeks. So you're just about catching up on sleep now.
Yeah.
And James, now that you have a daughter, your life will get back to normal in about 30 years.
I'm not doing the heavy lifting at the moment.
Now you'll bear yourself in even more work, so it'll all be good. It'll work out. So, but anyway, Billie Jean King, 40th anniversary. That film premiered on the American Masters series on PBS last September, and we just got the good news that series won the Emmy Award. I think it won another one for sound as well. But you were in the mix there, so congratulations on that victory.
Yeah, no, it's great that American Masters, which is contributed. Sorry, it was great at American Masters, which has contributed a great thing to, American cultural history,
Absolutely.
Continues to get honored for its work, across the series, and Billie Jean King was the first sports person that they honored with an American Masters documentary, and it was part of a mix of, four or five strong films, to ensure that it won the Emmy for Best Nonfiction Series.
Yeah. Now, you made that film for PBS. It's more of her entire life. Now, the film, The Battle of the Sexes, which premiered in London and Europe during Wimbledon last year, will that be released in the U.S. Anytime soon?
I think it will hopefully be released, but it's being released in Canada, actually, in 2 weeks.
Okay, it's a good reason to skip across the border, I guess.
Yeah. I mean, there's blackout period for the PBS version of the film, and then eventually the international version will be released in America too.
So
I hope
we'll see it on Netflix or somewhere eventually. I would hope so.
Yeah.
And now you're one of your latest projects, Pantani, the accidental death of a cyclist. The film was just concluded, and why don't you, Richard, and Richard discuss where that's going? Because I think it's going to be premiering here, right, or at least being shown here in Carlsbad.
Yeah. Let me throw out a website, lacostafilmfestival.org. That's going to be showing here at the La Costa Film Festival in Carlsbad in about 3 weeks, September 18th through 21st. But James, you can tell us more.
Hey, tell us about the film. Tell us about the film, James. What's it all about?
Well, the film tells the story of Marco Pantani. Marco Pantani was the last cyclist to win both the Tour de France and the Italian Tour, the Giro d'Italia, the two hardest cycling races on the planet. He was the last guy to win them both in the same year, which was in 1998. And he was kind of different to other cyclists. He was more like a rock star. He described himself as an artist who used the mountains to paint his masterpieces on a bicycle. And he was kind of, you know, pretty eccentric guy in this period where most cyclists were 6 feet tall. It was dominated by a man called Indurain, who was 6 feet tall, had massive lungs, and along came Pantani, who was like a lightweight taking on the heavyweights. He was 50 kilos, 5 foot six. You know, he was a small guy, but he was just brilliant in the mountains. And he sort of emerged, and the whole cycling world was kind of taken aback by this strong character. You know, it seemed that he would dominate the world of cycling forever until he failed one of the first doping tests in 1999. Technically, it wasn't a doping test. It was a health test because they couldn't detect drugs in the system at that point. So it was unclear whether, or at least unclear at the time, whether he'd been using performance-enhancing drugs. But what was kind of extraordinary was at this point he was on the 20th stage out of 22 of the Italian Tour. He was winning by an epic margin. And he was thrown out, you know, summarily kicked out of the race. And he basically had a mental collapse and spiraled into drug abuse, cocaine particularly. Tried to come back and, you know, did come back and took on Lance Armstrong, you know, and it was a very close run thing in 2000. But then his life spiraled out of control. And what the film really is an exploration of him as a character and a sort of boy from nowhere who rises to the top of the mountains, literally as well as metaphorically. Yeah.
And then
what happens when that sport is taken away? And I guess it explores, you know, both, you know, the highs of cycling and the real beauty of it, and it also examines what happens to individuals within professional sport, you know, and, you know, that looks at the system of sport that creates both champions and creates, a drug-fueled system.
Yeah, James, does it get into his mental health and addiction and anything? Because obviously we just lost Robbie Williams. We had a great player with the Padres, Ken Caminiti. You know, a lot of these stars really hit the skids and can't dig themselves out again. So does your film deal with that much or not too much?
Yeah. I mean, we sort of touch on that. And it's also about the paranoia. And, you know, basically, you know, you could be on top of the world and then suddenly somebody says one day, you know, hey, that guy's doping, and you never clear your name, you know, and everything you've ever done becomes tainted by one moment. And, you know, the sport can rise above that, but, you know, the individual who's built their life around, you know, around this, you know, can't necessarily find out. So, you know, what we attempt to do with the film is to both make a beautiful and moving film about a tragic individual, you know, who was a real hero, but at the same time had a dark side and was a real human being. And we try to explore, I think, you know, when people talk about doping in sport and they talk about Lance Armstrong, it's all about he's the bad guy, he's the bad apple, you know. But I think the reality of sport is that, you know, sport exists within the commercial system and, you know, any means possible to win, and, you know, the sponsors or the organizers are quite often aware, you know, that you know, people are running to the edge of the rules.
And,
you know,
nobody
makes any...
And back in the day, they were all doing it pretty much, weren't they? I mean, he was no exception, right?
Yeah. I mean, nobody, you know, I mean, the line I always say is nobody wants to watch the Olympics running 100 meters running 12 seconds, you know. Sport demands... And televised sport demands that things are done quicker and more impressively, you know, and there's a limit.
What I find really interesting about his struggles, well, he was known as Il Pirata, the pirate, because he would wear bandanas and earrings and so on. But anyway, so, he became, well, the best in the business in 1998 when he won both the Tour de France and the Giro d'Italia. But his real struggle became against the system that was kicking him out, even though the system basically promoted him and what he was doing and everybody was doing. And I think that was really what led to his downfall. He spent years and years of his life battling this thing, you know, the system that he was trying to get back into and to get his name cleared, and simply couldn't. And so that was even, I guess, more of a struggle than climbing the mountain, so to speak.
Yeah, I mean, you know, here's a guy who's, you know, not particularly well educated, who's good at one thing, and his whole identity is in that bicycle.
You know,
and if you take the bike away, you know, I'm kind of interested in what happens to that guy. You know, there are no sports. I mean, Andre Agassi, you know, talks a lot about depression in his autobiography.
Yes, I read it.
But James, we're at the end of the segment right now, though. But we'll be in touch, I'm sure. And we wish congratulations on the Emmy, and we'll be out at La Costa seeing this great film, and we'll invite all of our listeners and sponsors to be out there as well. So thanks for spending some time with us, Richard, James. We'll be right back with more of It's Your Money in Your Life right after this. All right, we're back with the award-winning It's Your Money and Your Life. And I think Richard wanted to plug the film festival before we get to our next guest.
Again, the website for the La Costa Film Festival in Carlsbad, lacostafilmfestival.org, O-R-G. And again, our great friend James Erskine with his piece, The Accidental Death of a Cyclist. I believe that one is showing Friday morning, September 19th. Final schedule is going to be up on the website shortly. It's a three-day event from September 18th to the 21st at the La Costa Omni Hotel. I think they also do screenings at Sinopolis as well as at the movie theater room at the Carlsbad Library on Dove Street, just down the street. So again, lacostafilmfestival.org. But Joe, we've got another great guest.
Yes, we do. On the line, and everybody in San Diego, well, any intelligent person has heard of this gentleman because he founded the show Away With Words over at another station. Oh, I could mention it, KPBS, what the heck.
They're our friends. But,
and he's an author of over 40 books. He's an expert in poker. He's just a very sharp and intelligent. He's an historian. He's got you could see his little trivia questions in the UT, I think, almost every day. We'll get that clarified in a moment. But he's on the line right now. Richard Lederer, how are you?
Just great, and thanks for having me. I have the perfect face for radio, so this is a good medium. That's how I landed the job at KPBS.
Well, join the club.
Now, Richard, I heard you speak once publicly, and how did you get so smart? Did you get formally educated, or did you just take this on yourself, all these different areas of interest?
Yeah, well, that's a bit of a tough question. Who says that I am smart? But...
Are you kidding?
I think that we're a product of both our genes, our genetics, and our environment. And I happen to the roulette wheel gave me some ability in both. But what's really been nice, Joe, is that the environment, especially of San Diego, and my wife Simone and I have lived here since January of 1997, so coming up on 20 years, San Diego is such an open-hearted place, and somehow this guy from the East, who knew a few things about language and history, it's just been a good match, both with public radio, where Charles Harrington Elster and I co-founded Away With Words, which is on the weekends, on about 200 stations now. And...
With all due respect, Richard, I prefer the original, but whatever.
well, I'll tell you, Martha and Grant are doing a great job.
They are.
That's called legacy when your successors, and I actually work with Martha for more than a year, are just carrying the torch and moving it forward. Mm-hmm. But also the UT, yes, the history quizzes are... Every day. A lot of people start their day. It's on page two now, American history. And it's been kind of local lately because, you know, we are coming up on the centennial, and in a sense, we've already started it, of Balboa Park and the Panama, California Exposition, the founding of the zoo. We're now getting into World War One, and we'll do quizzes on San Diego's involvement with that and its establishment as a military city.
Richard, why don't you just throw out one question for Richard and me, see if either of us have a clue. Justin, you can play along too.
All right, you guys, are you ready?
Yes. Yep.
You're good sports, right?
Yes.
I'm going to ask you two questions.
All right.
Okay? and what I want to tell our listeners is these are the two greatest presidential bar bets that anybody will have, meaning you ask these questions, the answer, everybody will say, oh, yeah, okay, that's fair, and you'll win the Shirley Temple, the beer, the whiskey sour, 80% of the time with the first and 95% in the second. So here's the first one.
Right, don't blurt it out if you know, Richard.
I won't.
Okay.
And I haven't been to a bar with a president in over 2 years. So.
Okay.
That's cute. Well, you know what they say, by the way? You do know the difference between a dog and a fox, don't you?
No.
Six beers.
Yeah. I knew that, but I wasn't going to say it.
One of you was laughing, yeah. The other two, but think about it. Okay.
I got it.
So here we go. Who was our youngest president ever? The youngest man to, live in the Oval Office. Our youngest president of our 44.
Is this a trick question?
No.
Okay. Because I want to say, he was young when he lived there as a son. I'll say George Bush, George W. Bush, because he lived in there, probably lived there with his father.
Yeah, but I mean, he was president at the time.
Okay. You have a guess, Richard?
No, I was going to say Bush, too, because I was thinking of the same thing, that he was living with his father.
Well, it's got to
be the youngest man, so now I
understand the question.
The youngest man ever, okay.
As president.
Is it in the 1900s, or can't you say?
I can't tell you that. all right, I'll tell you what. Yes, it is. No, right. I'll tell you that. That's
okay.
Right. I'll do that.
All right, you have a guess, Justin? I have no... All right, Justin is guessing JFK. What do you guess, Richard?
I was going to say JFK, but it's probably not.
I'll say Obama, just for the heck.
Okay, so Obama's fifth, and fourth is, you'd never guess, Ulysses S. Grant. He was 39 when the Civil War began. Third is William J. Clinton. And second is John F. Kennedy. Now, that surprises people. Kennedy, 43 and 7 months. Great head of hair, good-looking guy, fashion plate wife, young children, Actually, Jackie was pregnant with a third child, Patrick Kennedy, at the inauguration, but alas, the boy was stillborn.
Mm-hmm.
And so we think he's got to be the youngest, but he isn't. The youngest is Theodore Roosevelt.
Oh, my gosh.
So that just makes the 1900s. He came in the wake of the assassination of William McKinley, so he was not elected at that point. So Kennedy is our youngest elected president, but not our youngest president.
Okay.
And a little bit similar,
mm-hmm.
This one you'll win almost every time. Gentlemen, put your three heads together.
All right.
Can you name five presidents of the United States who are not buried in the United States, B-U-R-I-E-D. They are not buried in or on American soil.
Five of them?
Five.
Wow.
Wow.
I didn't know any were. Because you have to be born here to be president. So they wanted...
Yes, that's true.
Yeah.
You do.
Wow.
Okay, so are you ready for the benefit of our listeners, and they're winning a lot of beer?
Yes, tell us.
Remember, the question was five presidents of the U.S. who are not buried in the United States, and here they are. Jimmy Carter, George H.W. Bush.
Oh, they're all alive.
Okay. They're living.
Trick question.
Well, a little bit. Yes, I agree, of course. But tell me you're not going to use that at the next bar you're in.
No, I thought you were going to do the Calvin Coolidge win, where the lady bets him, I bet you can't say three words at dinner.
More than two.
And you lose.
Yeah. And hey, maybe one day around President's Day, of course, coming in February, I mean, I've got a whole bunch of these. He said, you lose, absolutely. And he was silent, Cal.
Great. Yes, I know that one. So you've got 40 books out. Now, Richard, you were born and raised where? New York?
Philadelphia.
You spent your whole life there? Or?
No, I went to, through high school, I went to college there, Haverford College, a little Quaker school. Then I went and taught up in New England at a church boarding school, Episcopal, called St. Paul's School. Think of Bishop's School, but you don't go home at night. You stay there.
Gotcha.
My three children went there, and I came. And then I stayed a little longer in Concord, New Hampshire. Came out here with Simone in 1997. It felt like home the minute we set foot here.
Mm-hmm.
There are so many wonderful causes in town that enlist me. to be helpful. And again, with your listeners, if you have a good cause and whatever my talents are can support you, certainly be in touch with me.
Sure, verbivore.com, verbivore.
Yes, that's the website, www.verbivore.com.
Right.
Carnivores eat meat.
Right.
Herbivores consume plants and vegetables.
And
a verbivore eats words, sometimes his own. Sometimes his own words.
And what happens after you eat them? Never mind. Anyway. So Richard, so what did you do professionally all those years? Did you make money, make a living playing poker like your daughter, or what?
And my son, remember
your son. Okay.
Well, the answer is, I made money as a teacher, and now I make my living through the sweat of my brain as a writer. I mean, of course, I make money from the books.
Right.
The publishers actually pay me to do them. As a speaker, I do about 100 appearances a year in San Diego. And if you go to that website, verbivore.com, or just Google Richard Lederer, you'll see them. It's just great. It's an extension of my teachership. I play poker as an amateur.
Mm-hmm.
I could never approach. I'm a tragic figure. A father who did not inherit the incredible ability of his children. And that's Howard the Professor Lederer and Annie Duke, the Princess of Poker.
We're going to get into poker when we come back with Richard Lederer, folks. Stay tuned for more right after these announcements. All right, we're back with the award-winning It's Your Money and Your Life, and now over to Richard to thank our sponsors.
A big thank you to our sponsors, UBS, on Prospect Street in La Jolla with Mr. Michael Quarantra and Mr. Drew Freitas. Drew Freitas going back to the U.S. Open, Joe, to say hi to our good friend Billie Jean King in about a week.
Very good.
I said, take my best-selling book and have Billie Jean sign it on page 114.
You're going to the U.S. Open?
No, Drew Freitas.
Oh, Drew Freitas, okay.
But he's
going
to have Billie Jean sign her name, her signature to my book on page 114. Billie Jean's going to love that.
Fantastic.
Anyway, Regents Bank, Sean Puckett and Steve Sefton, right across the street from UBS in downtown La Jolla, San Diego's best business bank. Our favorite CPAs on the planet, Polito Epic CPAs up in Vista, Don Epic and Paul Polito. Jason Kruger, who's coming up on the show next month, best CFO service here in San Diego, known as Signature Analytics. Brenda Geiger, estate planning and asset protection at the Geiger Law Offices. In fact, she's coming up as a guest in September as well. Carl Sheeler with Berkeley Research Group, the best business valuation firm in the country, helping business owners understand the risks that drive the values of their businesses and how to reduce those risks and improve the value of what is owned. And last but not least, Joel Gruskin, Kurt Gautreaux with Cost Segregation Initiatives, helping real estate owners improve their cash flow. And Joe, folks, go to our website, which is maintained by Courtney Lauber of PopX Graphics. We'll throw a plug in for her.
Absolutely.
What are they going to find?
She does a great job. Well, if they want to contact any of our sponsors, just get your cursor over to, or get on iymoney.com, first of all, and then get your cursor over to the sponsors tab. There's a drop-down menu, and you can find out all their historical information, their contact information, and they've all worked with Richard with great success for many years, correct?
In some cases, 25 years.
Right.
So, Richard, question. Since this is a business show, we got to throw something in about business. Poker, one of the most interesting risk-reward games or, you know, endeavors on the planet.
Absolutely. First of all, picking up from the tennis and Billie Jean, we do get one sort of expression or metaphor from tennis, and it's the ball's in your court. You can
right.
see that's a tennis term.
Right.
So now it's in your court, and you're asking me about poker. Well, I think you guys brought me on the show because I happen to be the most successful breeder of world-class poker players in history.
Right, exactly.
I'm the Richard Williams of poker.
Right.
But in my case, it's a son and a daughter, and that's Howard the Professor Lederer. Any of you who have been watching Poker After Dark, he's the main character on it.
Mm-hmm. Huh.
And his younger sister by 23 months, Annie Duke, the Princess of Poker, one of the three winningest women in the history of the game.
Wow.
My first wife and I taught them from diapers, and I don't mean our diapers, I mean theirs. And I run around with grizzled kitchen table veterans who curse the fact that Texas Hold'em was not available when we were boys. and young men. It was, you know, seven stud, five draw, follow the queen, day and night baseball, and all sorts of crazy stuff that minimized the skill. The greatest game ever invented is Texas Hold'em. And by the way, the scene in San Diego was terrific. One can get a game just about any night, particularly one wishes, 7 days a week through the meetups, because it is so compelling. Huh. And Texas Hold'em, unlike the other games, is more arithmetical. You can calculate your risk versus reward. It's exciting. Of course, when there's money at stake, and you should be playing for something that excites you but won't break you if you lose.
Mm.
So you've got the heart going, and you're determining. This game allows you to determine. Now, again, just for benefit of our listeners, in this game, you get two down that are only yours, and you go around the orbit and bet. Then there's a flop of three that's everybody's in the middle, then one and then one. So there are five in the middle, two in your hand, and you make the best five of the seven cards available to you, the two down and the five up. And I should mention, Joe, mm-hmm. they have wonderful nicknames, the down card, some of which I could not state on a family radio station like this.
Right, parental supervision is required for this show.
Speaking of tennis, one of them is when you get an ace-king. It's the best drawing hand in poker.
Right.
And you get an ace-king, and if you hit that ace or that king on the flop, then you've got a very high pair and a good kicker, meaning a good third card. Mm.
Uh-huh.
Well, if you get an ace-king, it's called Anna Kournikova, A-K.
A-K, Anna Kournikova.
And here's why. Looks great, never wins.
Right.
Because if you know Anna, and incidentally, this young woman, Cece Bellis, who just won a first round against Chabukova on the Open, a 15-year-old, you know, teenager.
Youngest since Anna,
a teenager.
Yep. Yep.
That is the youngest player to win something at the U.S. Open since Anna.
Wow.
But Anna never won a singles title. She was a very good doubles player. She did win a lot of those with Martina Hingis.
Anna's match was back in 96, by the way, so it's been a long time since it was somebody that young.
Well, young. Of course, you know, we saw that with Melanie Oden, and you know, she certainly played good tennis, but never got to the top. But sounds like you're a tennis fan.
Well,
I can do that in an interview.
Well, she had a lot of fans, Rich, because I remember going to the La Costa tennis tournament there, and she was playing one night, and you know how long her entire name is. Well, I don't know how many young, you know, teenage boys, but they had their shirts off, and they each had painted a letter of her name across their chest.
Right.
And
marry me, Anna.
No,
and
of course.
But the thing is that she had a lot of money with endorsements, and I think still makes a good living with that, but she never won. So AK looks great, never wins.
Mm-hmm.
You're dealt AK. You're under a 50% chance of pairing, but it will happen from time to time. You're going to win a good percentage of those, called Anna Kournikova.
Mm.
So the bit about the game, first of all, I'm 76.
Mm-hmm.
I'm the newest Philadelphia 76ers. A short time ago, I had my trombone birthday, 76 trombones. Legend. And I'm looking forward to my Sunset Strip birthday next year.
Oh, God, 77 Sunset.
Good. And I hope to reach, by the way, since you're actually laughing, so you must be a bright guy. You like my jokes. But I'm actually hoping to reach my coronet birthday, because the second verse is with 110 coronets.
There you go.
Close at it, assuming that I'm having a good quality of life.
You're not a Sixers fan, are you?
Say that again.
Are you a Sixers fan, a 76ers fan?
Yeah, well, I am. I know the most embarrassing.
I was going to say my condolences.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah, the most embarrassing lineup in the NBA.
Exactly.
I know.
Yeah. Well, whatever.
Yes, I actually went to high school in Philadelphia the same 3 years as Will Chamberlain went to the neighboring high school, Overbrook
High.
Yeah,
he went to Overbrook.
Wow.
So, I went to West Philly, but sure. It was the neighboring one. We had some good players who could put up a fight against them, but
was he the
7 foot and built like Superman.
Yeah. He was even the dominant player even in high school, I guess, huh?
Oh, my God, yes. Oh, no, he was always over 40 points. And since his book, if you may know, A View from the Top, I discovered why half the children in our neighborhood look like Will Chamberlain.
I read his book, and I know what you mean.
Yeah, we didn't call him the Big Dipper for nothing.
Exactly.
20,000, which I think is mathematically impossible, even for me.
keeps a person busy.
We're talking about his dalliances, is that
exactly.
What? Exactly. Okay.
You got it right, John.
Yeah, no, I think most listeners of a hip... So the thing with poker... is, like, I'm going to play 7 hours on Sunday. I'm going to be playing a cash game, no limit. And a lot of folks will play the 7 hours and, be sort of sad that it's over because you're running those numbers. What is my risk with my money? What are my percentages for winning? And what's my reward if I hit? So, for example, if I have two, let's say, hearts underneath, and two hearts sit on the flop, meaning the first three cards for the community cards, I know that I'm about 65-35 against me to hit. But if I have more two opponents or more against me so I can win twice or more of my money, it pays me to make that bet, even though I'll lose about a third of the time, because ultimately I will win over time with that strategy if I can do the calculation. And good players are sitting there, and most of them are doing those numbers. And then there's intuition. There are things that, of course, transcend the numbers. And it's social and just a great thing. And my point is to get off of the birthday, but my last 10 years from my mid-60s till now have been my most productive as a writer, particularly with children's books. I have a new children's book out called Monsters Unchained.
Wow.
And my history books, and of course they're reflected on page 2 of the Union Tribune.
Let's pause it right there, though, Richard, because we have to take another break. We'll come back with more poker Labor Day information and stuff about the Star Spangled Banner and your books right after this. Hang on.
Yo.
All right, we're back in the last segment of It's Your Money and Your Life with the great Richard Lederer on the line, the wordsmith and the author and the broadcaster. So we were talking about poker and how it relates to finance. Can you give us just a quick thumbnail on that?
Yes. Well, as I said, risk versus reward, there are a lot of very highly placed poker players, including my son, have been wooed by companies, corporations, because they know that these people understand risk versus reward and they don't let their nerves get to them. But what you're basically doing, and I think you do in business, is say, okay, what am I risking and what reward can I get for it? And you're taking the long-term view. I was reading in the UT today about Warren Buffett and how his investments tend to be long-term, and apparently he saves taxes and I guess capital gains on that
by going to Canada.
Mm-hmm. And going to Canada, you saw the Steve Breen cartoon.
Yeah,
you know, hey, we're going for the taxes, the biggest whopper of all.
Right.
Yes. So it has a lot of those qualities. If you're at a table with me, a high stakes game, and you're counting your chips a lot, I'm going to get the sense that you don't want to lose that night. And at the end of it, toward the end, I'll start pushing big bets at you and collecting your small bets because you're going to fold like a tent. And you have to look at poker as a marathon, not a sprint, as a career, not a part-time job, just for one night. And I think it would be the same with investment. So I think the game really promotes
discipline, huh?
Discipline thinking, and as I may be repeating, but I've had my most successful decade as a writer. My a whole line of new children's books and books like I'm just coming out with an American trivia quiz book on our history, which we really should know in this country,
mm-hmm.
and we don't. And I attribute that to playing more poker. It gives me a bigger brain because I'm not a natural numbers guy. So think outside the box, and you could well do some different things. Brush your teeth with your left hand instead of your right if you're right-handed, stuff like that.
Oh, now you're getting like Da Vinci.
Yeah, exactly.
But who really did think outside the box.
No question.
Yes, amazing mind.
That's for
but
sure.
Let's talk about words. The other day, since you mentioned the ball being in your court, the other day a lady friend of mine who's been doing way, way too much told me that she was juggling too many hats. And I told her, well, that's better, I guess, than wearing too many balls. But she said that. I've been juggling too many hats. So she sort of botched that one.
I get it. That is a mixed metaphor. Juggling too many balls.
And wearing too many hats. But she was juggling too many hats.
Okay, we get it, Richard.
But anyway. Wait a minute. Is this Richard the other guy?
This is the other Richard.
The other Richard.
Yeah.
And he's talking from the hospital where he's recovering.
Exactly. You got that right.
Yeah, we have that. Absolutely. I collect those. They're great fun. A mind like a steel sieve is one of my favorites.
Exactly.
We tend to run things together. When people say, I'm flustrated, they're melding what's called flustered and frustrated and putting it together. And irregardless is really disregardless of what you think.
Oh, it's just regardless, period, right?
Irregardless.
Yes.
And that is, again, a melding of irrespective and regardless. By the way, you may or may not know that I am usage editor of the Random House Dictionary.
Mm-hmm.
So if you ever want a grammar show, and you guys are pretty good in grammar, would you say?
I'd say.
We're decent.
All right, can I give you another question?
Sure, please. Sure.
Which is correct, 9 and 7 is 15 or 9 and 7 are 15?
9 and 7 are...
Neither one, because 9 and 7 are 16.
Damn.
Wow, Richard's... Now you're talking about...
my day. Hey,
I'm a CPA, okay?
Yeah.
I was hoping you.
I'm a CPA, 9 and 7, or whatever you want it to be.
That's right. You are a CPA, and I have to tell you, Richard, there's no accounting for taste, and I have no taste for account, and I have no taste for accounting. And would you like to know? Remember, I mentioned we have one expression from tennis that gets into our language.
Mm-hmm.
We have one from accounting. In all seriousness, would you like to know what it is?
No, please. Sure. Please.
It's making ends meet.
Okay.
And here's why. Ends means end of the year. Your mm-hmm. debits and your credits
right.
when you close the books at the end of the year or the fiscal
uh-huh.
year. And meet originally was M-E-T-E, meaning just.
Oh.
So at the end of the year, you want to be sure that you don't owe more than you've earned, so you make them justified, the ends meaning the debits and credits.
Ah, I did not know that. Did you know that, Richard?
I knew that, but you know, unfortunately, there's no good accounting humor out there.
Well, now, all these upcoming appearances, are they all the same, or will you do like a poker thing at one and talk about your books?
Oh, I do that. Richard, what you said about accounting and all, do you know when a man decides to become an accountant?
I don't actually. Fill me in.
When
please.
He discovers that he doesn't have enough personality to be an undertaker.
There you go. That's very true. It's very true. So.
Okay, so you're asking about the appearances. I have a number of different kinds. Many of them are for charity, where I offer to teach poker or do language for the benefit of.
Mm-hmm.
And just really quickly. Coming up, I'm presenting my Monsters Unchained for the benefit of my swim and racket club here in Scripps Ranch,
mm-hmm.
Doing an evening for the youngsters, the families. And then on the other end, I'm at Belmont Village in Poway, and that is assisted living.
Mm-hmm.
I'm doing on Sunday the 14th, the day, by the way, of the writing of the Star Spangled Banner, I'm presenting for the 50th anniversary of the Poway Museum right next to me, and I'm at the Lakeside Library. I'm working with teachers at University of San Diego. I'm helping Grossmont with their music scholarship.
Wow.
I'm doing American Airlines Vanguard Pilots, et cetera, et cetera.
Well, I'm going to suggest to Richard Musio over here that we get you for one of our sponsor and listener events. He has
we should do that. We bring people in for lunch.
An erudite lunch. You can't get a more erudite person than this guy.
Exactly.
Right? So
34th floor, something? University Club.
What,
it's fun.
Wait, what were you going to say,
Go
Richard?
Ahead.
I'd come at the drop of a request. I try to be learning dressed up to have fun, and if it helps your cause, I am there. Just put your fingers together and type. A little okay. Reminiscent of the late Lauren Bacall. You know, your lips together.
Your lips
as
together.
Well.
And, yeah.
Oh, and just type. Okay.
So, Richard, quick question. Is texting making the human race more intelligent or less intelligent?
Oh, geez.
Say that again. Oh,
texting. Is it making the human race more intelligent or less intelligent?
I know we're getting near the end. I'll try to be succinct here. Mm-hmm. In general, the computer is making us smarter in some ways. It was said that Da Vinci or maybe Ben Franklin was the last man to know everything that could be known. Mm-hmm. And our brains, which take up 25% of the energy and blood in our body, our brains really can't grow anymore. But the computer has come along to augment it. So we have the whole world at our fingertips.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe for another show we can talk about this. But I think in general, the computer, I will tell you this, Richard, the computer has tripled my output because I can research so much faster.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And it makes me a better writer mm-hmm. because I can constantly revise and move things around the way I couldn't do it on paper.
Sure.
Wow. You know, that's true. I mean, I go to Wikipedia, but I look at the footnotes. I see where do they source this material from.
I wrote my latest book without even touching a piece of paper.
Well, pretty much. It's very close to that here. And what happens is you can move paragraphs around mm-hmm. and try words
exactly.
and see how they look, especially if you're visual. It is an incredible gift. And again, some of us, I don't know your ages, but sit around saying, where was this thing when I was in college?
Yep.
You know, when I wanted to do the book report, and my God, the one book on the topic, somebody would take it out. What am I going to do?
Hey there, Richard, though, we're at the end of our show, unfortunately.
Sure.
We'll have you back again. Thanks so much for being
very
with
much
us.
Appreciate
so,
it.
So thank you to Richard. Richard Musto, great seeing you. Thank you to Richard Lederer, our guest, and James Erskine from London. Thank you to Justin Hart, our soundboard operator tonight.
Eric Rubalcaba, get better.
Yes, absolutely. And thanks to Craig Blank, our con executive, and Dave Sniff, our program genius. You have a great week, everybody. Get all the podcasts on iowamoney.com. We'll see you next week. Night now.